just another solid day in California. It's just the way that I was raised in California.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies.
Hey, it's Owen. Welcome to another Fansmanship.com podcast. After a little break in the podcast, we are starting up again this summer. For this podcast, I had Cal Poly head men's basketball coach, John Smith. Coach Smith was introduced about 8 weeks ago to Cal Poly and is in the process of doing a lot of things, it seems like. There's a recruit that they've gotten since he started, and there's a lot of other things going on, and I kind of wanted to sit down after the smoke had cleared and get an idea about kind of who Coach Smith is, where he comes from, what his philosophies are. We talked a lot of basketball. We talked some other stuff, too. I hope you enjoy this podcast with Cal Poly men's basketball coach John Smith on the Fansmanship.com podcast.
Get up on my level. My left where the rhythm is the bass and the bass is the treble. Where infidel rebels and tribes be clashing. No more paint dripped in the latest fashion. Police lights flashing. Payday advance, check cashing. Minimum wage.
Here with new Cal Poly head coach of men's basketball, John Smith. How's it going?
It's going good, Owen. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So glad to have you. And it's been kind of a fun, probably busy 8 weeks for you. What's been kind of something that you didn't expect in terms of moving to the Central Coast over the past, 8 weeks and kind of getting yourself more settled here? I mean, you've come in, kind of hit the ground running with getting some guys and everything else. What's maybe something like just either personally, like about moving and changing where you live or whatever else? There's been graduations, all kinds of things.
Yeah. It's been crazy. I didn't expect to be, having to go back and forth to Southern California as much as I have been, trying to get the family up here. But it's just been great. It's been more than what I expected. I love the Central Coast area. Just got off the golf course, as you know. So it was fun.
Yeah,
it's been fun.
Absolutely. So your perception of the Central Coast, I always like to know this. I'm originally I grew up here, but I kind of think sometimes it's good to get out and see other things too. And it's kind of a bubble here.
Right.
What were your perceptions about San Luis Obispo or the Central Coast before you got here, and how has that been kind of confirmed or maybe changed in some ways?
I've grown up in Riverside, the Inland Empire area, and it's a little bit faster, but it's not as fast as LA. So I'm used to this pace, and the pace here has been great for me. It's even slower than Riverside, which I love personally. It's a calming demeanor after the long days that you have in the office, and then you get away and it's nice. It's very calm.
Have you been able to explore, or your family been able to explore any other kind of outdoorsy stuff here? Or is kind of everybody's probably still in the middle of your son graduated. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff. You guys probably haven't had a chance to breathe, right?
We haven't been up here together as a family once, except for my press conference. My daughter just finished up at Cal, and she's transferring to Louisville. My son just graduated Sunday. He'll be up here next week. My wife has only been up here probably one other time, and that was for the Mustang Madness deal. Looking forward to getting everybody here soon.
So we'll talk about roster stuff in a little bit. You mentioned your son.
Yeah.
He's in grad school here. What's his status and for playing next year here?
So he's applied to grad school. They're waiting on his official transcripts. Once they receive their official transcripts, then he'll be admitted. There's a grad program that allows people to come in after July 1st. We were fortunate to find one, and he's excited. I'm excited to have him. It's gonna be tough. A lot of people aren't used to having the son of a coach on the team, as well as the nephew of a coach.
I was going to say that too. So
it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be a family affair on some level.
Yeah.
I had no idea that Keith was your nephew until the press conference, and somebody said was talking to your son and said tell me, you know, what does your cousin think? And I'm like, why are they asking about his cousin? Yeah. And then I kind of put two and two together. I mean, I guess with Smith, you're like, okay,
yeah,
maybe, you know, there could be multiple guys named Smith and them not be related.
Right, right. Case. No, in this case, he's my blood cousin. Okay. I mean, my blood nephew.
Right.
And you know, it's gonna be fun though. It's gonna be harder for them than it is for anybody else. And my son's used to it, but Keith is not. But I've been sitting down talking with him about some of the tough parts about it.
And you're not Keith's dad, you know. It's not exactly this, you know. That can be. Do you think it gave you more, I don't know, immediate legitimacy with the team? The fact that Keith could say, "Hey, this is my uncle. He knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing." Do you think having that connection?
It may have, but you know, the thing that I talked with Keith about is just make sure that everybody understands that I'm coach and not Uncle John. And you know, whatever happens in your locker room stays in your locker room. You never bring it to me. So he talked to the guys a little bit about, you know, my background, and I think some of them did their research themselves, and it's been a great marriage so far.
What do people, basketball fans on the Central Coast, need to know about John Smith?
That I'm a hardworking guy that's coaching for the right reasons. Let me, not that everybody coaches for the wrong reasons, but I've never coached for money. I've never coached for anything other than to help kids become their best. And, you know, I'm going to get the best out of every player that's in this program because I care about them more than just basketball players. And that's been my MO for, you know, my whole 28 years as a coach. So,
right. Stability has been kind of a theme so far. Mm-hmm. Getting into, like, the roster, getting into, like, I mean, most of the time when a new coach comes into a Division I program, you don't see roster stability like you've seen so far. And I mean, I haven't had any indication that anybody's going anywhere or anything else. You never know what could happen at the end of the year, but mm-hmm. it seems like kind of stability's been a general theme so far.
Yeah.
Was it something that you and Don talked about when you were interviewed? Is it something that you're trying to kind of maintain, or how, can you give me kind of your take on stability of a program when it changes hands?
Yeah, you know, everybody has the right to play for the coach that brought them in here and has the right to leave when the coach is, you know, unfortunately fired, like Joe was, who was a friend of mine. But Don and I talked about Cal Poly is a special place and everybody needs to have a home. And to me, what that means is don't come in here and run people out. And like I said, I coach for different reasons. They were my scout. I always felt confident about the talent level that was here. And it was a challenge to me to try and help change their mentality. The mentality is what's been, you know, faulty for a little bit for them. You know, because losers start to mount up and it starts to change your psyche. So I wasn't even thinking of trying to move anybody on. I was thinking in trying to help mentor these guys when I got here. And they've been receptive of that so far.
Yeah, so kind of changing existing culture with the existing guys, which is probably the most, one of the more difficult things to do, but also maybe satisfying at the end if you right. can actually do it. What are your plans for like changing culture? Is there anything like tangible, or what are the things that you're working on to kind of change that mentality or that culture?
Well, just trying to make sure that they're competitive in everything that they do, from, you know, being in the weight room, trying to be the hardest working team in the weight room, being on the floor, everything, every drill that we do has a competitive component to it. Just trying to get them used to just understanding what it takes to finish plays, finish games, because they were in a lot of games last year. And, you know, when certain things happen, it kind of folded. And you can see that happen, you know, when we do certain drills, and just trying to stop and change that mentality right away.
At your press conference, you said something about early on in your time at Fullerton that, you know, they were a problem. I forget the word. Maybe you said a problem. They were a problem, mm-hmm. Defensively especially. Yeah. And I think you could see that when other teams came in, mm-hmm. and you could see about, you know, 5 minutes in the second half, other teams going, oh, this isn't going to change. We're going to have to play at this pace for the whole game. And I used to joke about it. It's kind of like, you know, grinding another team into dust. Mm-hmm. And the football team does it with the triple option too, I think, right. at some level. Right. And there was some satisfaction there with that when it was going right,
right.
When they were winning. They had a couple winning seasons in a row, followed by the tournament season. As you talked about, you know, playing fast, to what extent is that, I don't know, the ability to play fast, like a byproduct of your personnel? Yes. And how much is that something that you can actually teach to anybody, no matter who they're there, and still have, you know, winning success?
Right, right. That's a great question. You know, you always want to coach to the personnel that you have. Playing faster, I think any personnel that you have can adjust to that. And it's just, you know, holding them accountable to get down to the floor and getting space, proper spacing within 7 to 10 seconds. And if they're able to catch and shoot it, you know, and it's an open shot, I'm okay with that. But teaching them what a good shot is and what a bad shot is the most important part. And then teaching them to grind it out if you don't have a good shot and move it side, top side, and make the defense make a mistake. So from a personnel standpoint, you know, you just have to get them in the right condition to be able to play that fast. So they know it's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, and I don't know, I probably don't know anything, but one of the more underrated parts I see in terms of being a coach is who you hire as assistants.
Right.
And I know one of your assistants already, but I don't know the other two that have been announced. So tell me a little bit about Rodney Tension.
Yeah.
He was at San Jose State, Stanford, LMU, U of A before that.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your relationship with him previously, if you've had one, and right. and kind of how you came about getting him here.
So Rodney and my older brother are really close. My older brother is a WNBA coach and, you know, longtime Northern California guy. Rodney played at USF, coached at, you know, Skyline Junior College with Coach Pontac, Pete Pontac, longtime JC coach, mm-hmm. who coached Keith's brother, by the way.
Okay.
I mean, Keith's dad, by the way, my older brother. So I used to come up to Northern California a lot, and Rodney would play in the summer leagues up there, right. and I was still going to Dominican University as a player. So I started knowing Rodney as a player back then, but I was always in awe of him,
okay.
you know.
Okay.
And then from there, he went on to, you know, do some great things as a coach, and I never let him know how much I respected him as a player and a coach, but we were always cordial. But when I got the head coaching job, I always wanted someone that's already been a head coach to help me with that aspect. And there was no one better in my mind than Rodney Tension. And so the relationship goes deep, and, you know, my respect and admiration for him goes deeper. You know, I think he's a great mentor, not only for myself and us coaches, but also the players.
Having been a head coach in that associate role and a head coach at a junior college level, but still at a college level previously with Diedrich, is that something that you kind of wanted to, like, mirror in terms of having a guy who's had head coaching experience?
Exactly, right? Exactly. Because I realized what my worth was with Diedrich, and I didn't know it as much to the extent until, like, Diedrich would pull me aside, you know, to really keep doing that. You know, I didn't see that or appreciate you doing that. So. And Diedrich was pulling in so many directions that he knew he can leave, and myself and Danny Sprinkle could run the practice.
And that's why I kind of prefaced this whole question with, like, I think it's one of the more underrated things in college sports to me, because of what you just said. A college head coach has to go play golf from time to time with donor or with whoever.
Exactly.
They have to go do whatever they have to do to keep their program going, and they need to know, or they go to go recruit or whatever.
Yeah.
They need to know that things are happening, right?
Exactly. And he brings that for me, you know. And then, you know, obviously, you know, David Hanson, but I think I really hit a home run with David Hanson. I think David Hanson has a chance to be one of the premier up-and-coming coaches. He has great rapport with the guys. He's a great teacher, and he's great in the community. He's played the game. He has connections throughout the country. So David's going to be special.
And David, you know, was a player when the last transition happened. When Joe was hired, David was a year or two in playing here. And I think it's kind of interesting to see now he's an assistant before and after both as well.
Exactly.
In the program. And in terms of the stability, I guess.
Right.
Maybe having a coach who was here previously is probably a good thing.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, there's things that, like, handling from a compliance issue, from academic issues, you know, just those types of things. He helps me navigate the waters. He took me around campus just the other day, and we were able to focus on getting one of these grad transfers in and connected the dots for me. And, you know, he's been phenomenal in that aspect. But David's special. And then
I agree. Yeah. And so I mean, yeah. David's. Yeah. You said all the things I was going to say, but yeah. I agree with the stuff you said about David. Mm. And then obviously there's Justin Downer.
Yes.
Who I met the other day at the baseball game.
Yes.
He's a younger coach.
Yeah.
But he has Riverside ties.
Right.
Is that how you knew him before?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So when I was coaching at Cal State Fullerton, I was recruiting a kid from Riverside Poly, and the head coach of Riverside Poly, he and I grew up together.
Okay.
And he coached my son in high school, and he's a phenomenal coach. His name is Yancey Donson. So
okay.
I go to their practice to recruit this kid, and Justin's his assistant, and he introduced me to Justin. I'm like, okay. And we're sitting on the side, and I'm trying to watch practice and watch the kid, and he's like, what do you think of the kid? I was like, I don't know about the kid, but who is the coach that you just introduced me to? He had total command of the players, almost the same age as them, you know,
right.
but he was a great teacher on the floor. And then come to find out, he worked with one of the best AAU programs in the state of California, and I developed a relationship with him through that program, recruiting that program.
Sure.
And I always told him that, you know, if I ever get a job, you know, I would really consider bringing you because I really think that you have a knack for this. And, you know, as soon as I got the job, you know, I called him, and, you know, I think Washington State and USF were also trying to get him in. And he and I developed a relationship the last 4 years, but he's really good, really good.
He hasn't been a head coach yet, but, like, he's a guy who you're pretty confident with.
Yeah.
That way, obviously. Mm-hmm. Great, mm-hmm. Great. Do you guys have a DBO yet?
Yeah, we do.
Are you allowed to tell me who it is?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
So I guess we don't have a DBO.
I heard some rumors, so we'll save it. AAU programs and
right.
stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask you the Keith question, but you kind of answered mm-hmm. it already.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you about your son. Kind of hit that already. The roster was changing kind of anyway, I think, like mm-hmm. this year. Mm-hmm. Like there were some new faces who were maybe on campus last year, but guys who couldn't play for whatever reason, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, whether it's Nolan or Keith,
mm-hmm.
whether it's Kyle who's mm-hmm. Who redshirted, mm-hmm. but also like Junior Ballard was hurt for all conference play, and that to me was a big difference maker.
Yeah.
Also you have a couple freshmen coming in.
Mm-hmm.
There's Colby Rogers, right?
Yeah.
And
Alamami.
Okay, mm-hmm. I want to make sure I'm Karoma.
Mm-hmm.
And he's coming, right?
Yes.
He committed before
yeah.
all that happened, but,
yeah.
but he's coming as well. So, I mean, you're talking maybe like 4 to 6, depending on how you want to look at it,
yeah.
new bodies, new faces,
right.
who are going to be competing with the existing guys who are here as well.
Exactly.
How do you see the summer playing out for and kind of preseason in terms of guys trying to prove? I mean, it was your scout last year,
right?
So you knew some stuff about Cal Poly,
right.
from an outsider's perspective, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, guys are going to have to like kind of prove it to you at this point too, right?
Yeah, yeah, without a doubt. But that goes back to what I said about changing the mentality and making it be more competitive. You know, it's a clean slate for everyone, so everyone's going to have to compete for minutes, and they understand that, and that translates onto the court. But the guys that you mentioned, like Alamami and Kobe Rogers, who we signed, both of those kids I was recruiting at Cal State Fullerton.
Oh.
And so we didn't have a scholarship at the time, but the relationship was built, and the respect for their game was already there. It was very fortunate that we got those. But the kid you mentioned, Junior Ballard and Kyle Colvin, those two have been very, very surprising to me. I knew Junior because he was on my scout report. I knew he was hurt, and I thought he was special.
The last couple games that before he got hurt,
yes.
he was kind of coming into his own in
yeah.
that kind of way that freshmen do
right.
in December,
right.
and then he got hurt.
He's a natural-born scorer.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter what offense you run, he knows how to score. So now it's just trying to get him to understand just how to be effective in what we're doing. And he's seeing that right, right now. So I'm excited about the roster.
And Kyle, too, right?
I mean, yeah, Kyle.
Somebody told me he's really kind of come on for a kid who had a red shirt.
Yeah.
And I watched Kyle since he was a freshman in high school
right.
up here.
Right.
And he's always kind of been one of those guys who just kind of is in the right place all the time.
Right. Yeah. He can play 3 different positions for us, and that's valuable. He has a high IQ, shoots it well. He wants to be better. Wants to get better. So those type of kids are someone that are going to find their way on the floor with me.
Yeah, yeah. this seems like it's a year that you guys are, and if my math's right, that you guys maybe have the option to go overseas. Right. Is that something that's happening this summer maybe? Yeah. Is it happening?
Yeah, it's happening.
Okay,
it's
so happening. Tell me about where you're going. Yeah, what's the plan for the summer?
Yeah, so we're going to London September 1st. So foreign tour. We'll be there for 10 days.
Okay.
The great thing, the beauty of it, is that you get a chance to practice in the summertime.
Right.
Full 10 practices. So for a new coach coming in, a new staff coming in, trying to put in a new system, that's great. And we're starting to implement parts of it. But those 10 days in the summer will be huge for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a alum, Kyle Audister, mm-hmm. who played professionally in England. I think Sheffield Sharks or something.
Yeah.
You know, a team like that. I think he works for the Pelicans now.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of those kind of alums out there.
Right.
I want to talk about your history, just because people might not know. You said you're from Riverside. Mm-hmm. You have deep Inland Empire roots. I think that's a pretty easy thing to say.
Yeah.
You played hoops, I think, for Jerry Tarkanian.
Yes.
At UNLV for a minute, right?
Yeah.
And you went to Dominican. So, like, can you tell me kind of your career in basketball, just kind of quickly, like, you know, give me some high points, just for people to kind of know where you're coming from, you know, where you've been.
Yeah. You know, so being born and raised in Riverside, Reggie Miller and Cheryl Miller were Riverside Poly, but you know, they put, and there's some others in that community that put Riverside on the map, but it really motivated people to want to really, you know, be great in basketball.
Are you and Reggie close to the same age?
Yeah, Reggie. Okay. Reggie is 3 years older than us. Reggie and Cheryl's parents and my parents lived together. They're military.
Oh,
we're military families. So we grew up. Yeah, March Air Force Base. So we grew up calling each other's parents aunt and uncle. So I would really try and play Reggie one-on-one a lot as a young kid. And Cheryl would kick all of our butts.
Yeah.
But after high school,
those stories are kind of legendary.
Yeah. After high school, I had one scholarship offer way back east, and I didn't want to leave Southern California. So my father, who played for Tarkanian, at Riverside City College.
Wow.
So he played for Tarkanian at Riverside City College, won two state championships. He called Tark and said, "Hey, my son, you know, he only has one scholarship. Can he walk on?" So coach allows me to walk on.
Okay.
And I still didn't understand what a walk on was. I'm thinking I'm going there to play, and I see Stacey Ogman, Greg Anthony. You know, I mean, these guys are just on a different level.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You know, long story short, I didn't last there long. I could have played all 4 years, but the competitor in me wanted to play.
Wanted to actually get on the court.
Exactly.
Games, right?
Exactly. Sure. So I left the year before they won the national championship.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you know all those guys.
Exactly.
Those guys are people you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Stacy and I talked about even him being part of my staff here, but he was, you know, overseas being a head coach now. So left there and. Before I went to go play for my brother at Dominican University,
your brother was a coach there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I ended up going into coaching. I went back home frustrated and was a 20-year-old coach at JW North where I graduated.
Okay.
And Mike Barti, who's still the coach there, he's a legendary California high school coach.
I've seen them play here at the Christmas Classic.
Exactly.
They've come up a number of years. Dikembe Martin was there when they won it. They beat
coached there for a little bit, and then my brother talked me into getting some surgery and playing for him, and finished up. You know, I had a pretty good career at Dominican, and went straight into coaching again.
Okay.
You know, so
you've been coaching just like straight on.
Yeah.
Basically, you've been either playing or coaching.
Right.
Since you were under 18.
Exactly.
Yeah, one or the other.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. And what was it like to play for Jerry Tarkanian?
Oh, it was phenomenal. You know, and that's what kind of formulated and my coaching style.
Okay.
You know. Because one thing that people don't realize about Coach Tarkanian, he was a phenomenal leader, phenomenal mentor, phenomenal man, phenomenal father. But he had no ego. So he hired, we had some great coaches around us. Tim Gergerich, who was probably one of the greatest coaches that people don't realize because he liked to be behind the scenes. He's an NBA coach. John Welch was a young up-and-coming coach who played for Coach Tarkanian. He's now with the LA Clippers.
Okay.
There was quite a few others that went on professionally, but it taught me that to get the most out of your staff, you have to allow them to be who they are and don't worry about, you know, what it looks like to your ego. You know, like who gets the credit? It doesn't matter. You know, as long as the job's being done. So you can ask David and them. I push them like, hey, lead this, lead that. So I want them to have a voice on the floor, and that's where I got it from. But Coach Sarkanian was phenomenal.
Who's your biggest like coaching influence?
Probably, you know, Coach Sarkanian, Mike Barti, and Steve Smith, my brother. All those guys really formulated who I am as a coach, and they have different aspects. Coach Barti, my high school coach, instilled discipline in us and understood the importance of discipline and how it translated onto the court and into life. My brother was probably the most fundamental coach that I've ever had. He knows the game inside out, and from a tactician standpoint, I took a lot from him there. And then Coach Tarkanian, just from, like I said, from being someone that doesn't have an ego and gets the most out of players. And, you know, we only had one goal, and that was playing 110% every single time, you know. And so those types of things that I took with me forever. And from RCC, you know, there's only been two coaches that have won a state championship, and that's Jerry Tarkanian and John Smith. So I learned a lot from him.
That's kind of wild how it kind of came full circle, right? For you to end up at RCC where your father played for Coach Sarkanian and be the coach there. Yeah. That's pretty wild. That's kind of like, you know, you wrote that people was that circle's too closed there. Right. I don't know. It's not how real life works for people. What was something that was surprising for you at Cal Poly over the last 8 weeks? I know it's only been 8 weeks. Is there anything that's like that you've gotten here and been like, oh, that I didn't expect that to be that way?
Well,
good or bad, I don't, you know, whatever.
I'm still blown away at the support, you know, from everyone, the donors, just people that have gone to school here. It's not that they support men's basketball. I went to we were at Mustang Madness.
Yeah.
I mean, that was phenomenal. Yeah. How much money they raised for every student athlete, and it's because they love their experience here. You know, and that's been mind-boggling to me. You know, I'll just leave it at that.
Absolutely. As someone who has experience in this conference, what is it going to take? I guess how can a school like Cal Poly kind of consistently compete in the top half of the conference? What are like reasonable expectations in terms of, you know, what they're going to see this year?
It's going to be a process, but you know, I think we can compete with anybody with the talent that we have here and the talent that we have coming in. But you know, to win in this conference consistently, as you can see, when we were at Fullerton, we ended up having a couple guys that were better than this conference. They didn't start out that way, but they developed into that. Irvine's had a couple guys. Long Beach has a couple guys. You know, Santa Barbara has a couple guys. You have Northridge has a guy that's better than this conference. So you have to find someone like that, either through transfer, through high school, and just develop them. And if you get one or two of those guys, you have a chance to, you know, be at the top four of this conference consistently.
From an outsider's perspective, like a guy like Kyle really developed kind of freshman to sophomore to junior. By the time he was junior, okay, now he's kind of like fully formed.
Yeah.
Like Kyle Allman Jr.
Right.
Khalil was kind of like that early on even.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably, you know, those two kind of pushed each other.
Yeah.
But I think that's interesting talking about like guys who are kind of like better than the conference or better than the kind of the majority of the rest of the guys in the conference.
Right.
And having a couple guys like that is definitely. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about development because year to year, I really like watching players like develop.
Mm-hmm.
I think in college sometimes we have a false sense that like a player is fully formed when the first time we see him. And guys, I think maybe have that sense about themselves sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, this is the kind of player I am.
Right.
Even. I just kind of want to get your take on like that development process because especially at a place like Cal Poly and it happens in all sports. You know, probably like baseball is maybe the one that you can see start to finish sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can see a big jump from 1 year to the next or something.
Yeah.
But I think basketball, you can see that too with guys.
Yeah.
What's your take on kind of that development of guys and kind of looking at guys and getting them to understand, hey, this isn't the guy that you have to be the whole time. I need you to be this guy this year. I need you to this game or whatever. But like, here's the long term, who I want you to be eventually.
There's different types of developments and development coaches, right? I'll use Kyle Allman, for example. I'm not the type of development coach that's going to get on the floor and show you how to do an in and out cross step back. Da, 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 da. That's not me. I'm a more of a fundamental development coach. What are your feet look like every shot? What does your follow through look like on every shot? And then also on film, you know. But I'm fortunate to have coaches that develop on the floor different than me.
Right.
Kyle Allman found someone that really took his game to another level in individual skill development in one of our younger assistants, Anthony Santos, and then another coach that he latched
on
to
himself.
Right.
Outside of Fullerton.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But he would come watch the first two or three years, he would come watch film with me. And film development is also, he would see where he can apply certain things. Yeah. And he was very good at applying it on the spot.
Finding the cracks and wedging those cracks.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So film, watching film is a part of skill development, as well as getting on the floor is a part of skill development. But you have to want to get better at both of those.
I know some guys who do kind of individual skill development who aren't associated with, you know, programs or teams. Mm-hmm. As a coach, like, how do you view those kinds of, like, trainers, et cetera? Like, some of them are really great.
Yeah.
Like, and guys I know that are really good and the guys go to. And then, you know, like, is that something that you always have to be, like, wary of? I mean, that's part of the landscape that's changed in the last 15 or 20
it has.
Years.
It has. And, you know, if you, you know, every kid wants to be an NBA player. And if you look at an NBA team, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, all those guys have their own skill development guys. So they think that's the way to go. And I'm okay with it as long as they're not going against what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
You know, and the people that were working out, the Cal State Fullerton guys when I was at Cal State Fullerton, they would come in and talk with us and meet with us. What do you need to see them do? Be better at, you know. Right. With Jackson Rowe, he worked out a lot with me, so we would work on you know, finishing in tight spaces, things like that. And you know, now he's working with someone that is trying to help him with that as well.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
You just have to be careful that people are not teaching them something that you're not trying to get accomplished on the floor.
Right, kind of going against or being counterproductive, I guess. Trying to see. I wrote down a bunch of questions. I'm just trying to make sure that I'm... Do you have any non-negotiables for players in your program?
Yeah. You got to be on time, and you got to work hard every single time. And you have to understand the importance of hard work and discipline. That's a non-negotiable. If you're not going to go hard, it's going to be a tough road for you here. We haven't started that as much yet. I'm just trying to get to know these guys and figure out, you know, how to make them tick, how to motivate them. But we've already had some early morning 5 mile runs. I'll just say that.
that sounds fun? Question mark. Before we get into like a couple lightning round questions and we're done, diversity on campus is something that's kind of a hot button issue around campus. It's been discussed a lot over the past few years. How aware are you, or like, I guess, have you been made of all the, you know, everything that's gone on over the past 18 or 24 months? Mm-hmm. And do you, like, I always feel like athletics is a place that can be like a shining example in that area, to kind of help move things along.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on kind of coming into Cal Poly at this time? Like,
you know,
campus?
You know, diversity, you know, in my interview process, I talked about where I grew up from. And, you know, I grew up in a tough neighborhood, tough part of Riverside. And one of the things that helped me is that they bussed our neighborhood to four different elementary schools. And it forced us to see things outside of our world. And it's helped me, when I interact with people, to get them to understand that that's important, to understand that there's more things outside of your world that you need to realize. And, you know, and then my grandmother always taught us it's nice to be nice, you know. So I don't really focus on the negatives that have gone on. And I just focus on how can I make a difference? How can I make an impact in this community and get people to see who I am and what I represent and see that there's more people like that out here.
Awesome. Mm. Very good. All right, the place Cal Poly men's basketball can improve the most quickly is?
Good question. Probably on the defensive side, you know. That's something that we're really going to focus on. And they know it. There's a lot of data. There's a lot of information on each player of where they need to get better at.
So. Where are like advanced analytics for college basketball? I know that the NBA, it's like, you know, it's kind of more publicized now. Maybe it's been, you know, the Daryl Morey and the, you know, whatever has been a thing. But like, I know there have been like past DBOs and other people who've like, you know, gotten, you know, who can program all the stuff that they need to program, and there's places you can send and get info back. Like, what's the current state of that in college basketball or in mid-major college basketball?
Yeah, there's different companies that you know, branch out and ask you if you want to buy their service, and they'll break it down for you. And I've yet to been in a program that's done that. I think every school uses Synergy, and Synergy will rate you from everything. Offensively and defensively, how are you in ball screen? How are you in isolation plays? How are you?
Out of balance,
yeah, right, exactly. Balance, right. All those. So it starts there for us, and then you know, just try and branch out on our own.
Got it. Cal Poly fans will know things are going well because
the guys are playing fast and under control, and they're defending without conceding a basket. If those things are happening, things are going well.
One thing people don't know about you, one random thing people don't know about John Smith.
Wow, that's a good one. Then I'm afraid of heights.
Okay.
I don't like to fly, but it's part of the job.
Okay.
I try and go to sleep on every plane.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Afraid of, okay. And have you been up to the skybox there? Are you up to the top there? Not a fan of that, maybe?
Not a fan of that. I took pictures there.
Yeah, that's right. We were up there.
Yeah.
You were up there.
Yeah, and I was nervous.
You're like, I don't really want to sit on this counter right
at
here
all.
On the edge.
No.
Okay. Not at all. That makes more sense now.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Coach, I really appreciate you, you know, spending some time. Any last words for Mustang fans or students or anybody?
No, I just would thank everybody for welcoming with open arms and the energy that they've shown. And I look forward to having everybody in the gym. And hopefully we can continue this excitement throughout the year. So, thanks, Coach. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in trouble town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision, and the people on the streets they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to trouble. Signs out on the streets direct me running back.